Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday full of sports live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Great to have you in today. Joy Taylor's joining. Nick Wright in 25, 30 minutes. Ooh. Joy, how are you? What a day yesterday was.
Yeah, Nick's going to be fired up. I had a great day. Heat won. Basketball all day.
He's good.
Love having sports on again.
So do I. Such a great life. Remember how easy my job is.
Yeah. You know,
come in and talk sports. So Portland beats the Lakers last night. Neither team played well. Both teams had a bunch of open looks. It wasn't a very complicated game. The Lakers didn't hit their open looks. They were 5 for 32 on threes. Second worst in playoff history. And Portland didn't hit all of them either, but they hit more of them. It was not a hard one to figure out. Neither team played really well. Dame disappeared for a couple quarters. LeBron, AD disappeared. But when I watched that game last night, we always talk about situational football, like red zone football. Last night was situational basketball. But the situation was Dame hit two big threes late and Melo hit one. That was the game. That was really the game. There are three problems with the Lakers I saw last night. Now, two of them will not get in the way of the Lakers potentially winning this series. Two of them won't. One will. So let's talk about the first thing I saw. Once again, Anthony Davis disappears in the fourth. This is who he is. He got no dog. He's great in the first two, three quarters, but his fourth quarter last night, minus 11, the graphic for our Fox Sports FS1 audience, he just disappears. Some of it's, I think a lot of it's psychology. Maybe he runs out of gas. But, I mean, now, this, the Lakers can still beat Portland with this because they beat the Clippers twice this year, and AD disappeared in those games. The Lakers were the number one seed in the West, and Anthony Davis disappeared in a lot of fourth quarter games this year. So the first problem, and it happened again last night, is not going to get in the way of LA beating Portland this series. The second problem, Lakers do not have a trustable and dependable third score. Again, they ended up number one in the West, not having one. Danny Green was awful, minus 20, couldn't hit shots. Kuzma, LeBron didn't trust Kuzma. You can see his body language. Again, this doesn't necessarily mean that the Lakers can't beat Portland. Okay. The third problem, and it's very rare. I see this every few years with LeBron. It's very infrequent, but I've seen it happen before. And this one, if you're a Laker fan, is a problem. It's very subtle. LeBron began overpassing last night. Everybody say, oh, his passing was great. This team does not have a dependable third score. LeBron needs to drop 34, not end up with 15 assists. Why is he overpassing? Because of Whiteside. Hassan Whiteside had 5 blocks, played very well. This is what Roy Hibbert did. Remember years ago when LeBron and that Miami team would face Indiana and the games were way closer than they should have been? You're always like, how is D-Wade and LeBron and Bosch struggling with Indiana? Now, they would win the series, but they were difficult because Roy Hibbert would get in LeBron's head and LeBron would start overpassing. This is a LeBron thing, and it doesn't happen very often. But this is why LeBron, when he plays with Kevin Love or Chris Bosch, or Anthony Davis, would prefer those guys are out of the lane so that the guy guarding them, the big, doesn't block the rim. It doesn't happen a lot. And everybody last night was doing a victory lap on LeBron's passing. This team is not gifted offensively enough to win with LeBron being the best passer on the floor. They're going to win if he scores in this series because you can't trust Danny Green. You can't trust Kuzma. Rondo's coming back. He's not a shooter. This is a bunch of odd parts. It's a reality show in sneakers. So the first two will not get in the way of beating Portland. AD disappears in the fourth. He does all the time. And they don't have a trustable third score. I mean, they beat Portland earlier this year with those things. But LeBron, and it's subtle, and it doesn't happen very often. But a couple of things have happened throughout LeBron's career multiple times. He loses occasionally confidence in his jumper. Now, it doesn't happen much anymore. It did a lot in his first 10 years. So what would he do when that happened? He would score at the rim. It happens very infrequently now that he loses confidence in his jumper. But he's always liked the basket clear. He's always liked it clear. So if he loses confidence in his jumper, he can take the smaller defender, the slower defender, and score at the basket where he's all-time remarkable. But just keep your eye on this. If Hassan Whiteside, who's a lot better than Roy Hibbert, if he gets into LeBron's head in this series and LeBron becomes uber passer, super passer, best teammate ever, that's a problem because the Lakers are not deep enough or talented enough for LeBron to dominate and get 17 assists a night. He's got to drop 34 in this series at some point to clinch it because Portland's real. Milwaukee lost last night, and for the record, Chris Middleton was awful, but let's save that for later. One of the reasons that Patrick Mahomes is great, Russell Wilson's great. To me, those are the best two quarterbacks in the league. Lamar's not in that class yet. Play with a lead, play from behind, it doesn't matter. Tom Brady, play with a lead, play from behind, doesn't matter. Lamar Jackson's a way better quarterback with a lead than from behind at this point in his career. This goes for Giannis as a basketball player. Giannis with a lead is great. He's physically imposing. You don't get any cheap baskets. He plays his game. Giannis trailing is not the same player. He doesn't shoot threes. You need quick points. He doesn't get them for you. Last night, Giannis, no field goals, final 11 minutes. Mr. MVP, fourth quarter trailing, 3 points. Giannis trailing late in a game is not as dominant, imposing, or important as Giannis leading. And this is the Lamar Jackson thing. Now, nobody said Giannis in the fourth quarter was a terrible player. Nobody thinks Lamar's awful trailing. But when you watch Baltimore trailing and suddenly Lamar Jackson's running ability and run fakes, who cares? You got to throw the ball. You're down by 14. There's 7 minutes left. They're not as important. The Bucks this year were 9-16 when they trailed by double digits at any point in the game. They're not a comeback team, especially late. Can't trust Chris Middleton. Giannis doesn't shoot threes. And Malcolm Brogdon, oh, he's gone. Okay, so, and that's with Lamar in Baltimore. When you watched Patrick Mahomes this year trail in the playoffs, Houston 24-0. I watched that game. My only thing was, all right, let's just let this little run by Houston wear out. Give Patrick the ball. He's going to be fine. You didn't think that Super Bowl was over mid-fourth quarter, San Francisco controlling it. You don't think about leader trailing with Patrick Mahomes. It's not a thing. You don't think about that. By the way, Dame. Actually, I could make an argument that Patrick Mahomes and Damian Lillard are more dangerous trailing. Because when Dame's trailing, it's like, oh, he'll take any shot. Like, even the slight restrictions, you know, Terry Stotts, let's move the ball around. When you're just like, no, Dame, hit threes. And he takes the brackets off. Like, there's no restrictions. Dame's scarier. Steph Curry is scarier. Patrick Mahomes, you know, he's playing within the guidelines. Uh-oh, now Patrick Mahomes trails 24-0. Andy Reid turns to him. Just go be magic. Mahomes and Dame are scarier trailing. Because now you know they're playing with a focus and intensity, and there are no restrictions. There's no coaching restrictions. Lamar Jackson trailing, his passer rating drops. His completion percentage was almost in the 50s. It's not quite the same. That's why, to me, Russell and Patrick are different level. Lamar may get there this year. But when I'm watching them, the Bucks trailing last night, and it's funny about this. I for years and years, I said this with Mike Tyson, the fighter. Mike was great when he was landing punches and he was leading a fight. But I watched Mike Tyson twice against Holyfield and once against Lennox Lewis when he was trailing. By the fifth round, you're like, it's not working. And Mike wasn't the baddest man on the planet. He wasn't even the baddest man in the ring that night. Certain fighters, certain football quarterbacks, certain NBA players, they are downhill stars. They get a lead on you and watch out. Then there's Dame. Then there's Mahomes. Then there's Russell Wilson. Then there's Steph Curry. You can argue they're more dangerous trailing. That's not Giannis. And that's what I saw last night. Milwaukee got down. I mean, Giannis' shot chart, it's all around the rim, man. Not a lot of stuff in the perimeter. I mean, he can occasionally hit a three, but that shot chart is around the rim and above the rim.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Media people, you're just too nice. You're too swell. So Bill Belichick is short with everybody at press conferences. You can ask legitimate questions to Belichick. He'll eat you apart. On to Cincinnati. I mean, Belichick doesn't give anybody the time of day. People who ask legitimate questions. But have you noticed Belichick in the last couple of months? He's like your friendly local junior varsity football coach. Got time for the media. Gives long answers. Somebody yesterday asked him about quarterback position platooning it. In his entire career, Belichick would have literally rolled his eyes. Belichick yesterday, when asked about platooning quarterbacks, said, oh, I would certainly consider it. It may give us the best chance to win the big game Sunday. Oh, come on. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Belichick is a historian. He is an unbelievable football historian. When the NFL 100 list came out, it was Belichick who fought for a 188-pound defensive end named Bill Hewitt. Bill Hewitt, because Bill Belichick fought for him and knew his history. He was called the offsize kid, Belichick informed us. The 30s, they smoked on the sidelines. People didn't wear helmets. Bill knew schematically how his team used Bill Hewitt. Schematically wasn't a word in the 30s. And Bill fought for Bill Hewitt to be a top 100 player because Bill knows history, loves history. His mom spoke seven languages. His dad helped create scouting. Bill is a football historian, and he knows platooning quarterbacks. Do not work in this league. Come on, bruh. Media people, figure it out. You think, A, you don't think Belichick has a plan with three A-plus college prospect quarterbacks, a position he needs to fill? And B, Belichick is suddenly doing the opposite of what he's done the last 20 years. He answers stupid questions with kindness. We'll certainly think about platooning them their quarterbacks. Golly, if it helps us win the big game. He let smart, high IQ, veteran, mostly affordable players go. He didn't address in free agency key holes. Like, they don't have a tight end who's ever taken a snap in the league that can play. These are all things that are the opposite of Belichick. He doesn't have time for dumb questions. He's not going to talk about platooning quarterbacks. I mean, can you imagine if somebody would have asked him? Brady and Garoppolo, as you can platoon, he would not have answered the question. Now he's got Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer who could walk through a mall in New England and nobody would know who he is. And it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, just, you know. Suddenly Bill sounds like the junior varsity coach that everybody in high school likes because the head coach is mean. And the junior varsity coach is like, we'll play six kids at quarterback. Kids just should have a right to play the game. That's not who Bill is. Bill's the most manipulative coach. And as a manipulator myself, I can spot it. He's the most manipulative coach in league history. There isn't even a second. I don't even think Pete Carroll's a little. Is there a second? Most coaches are like Mike Tomlin. They love football. They're earnest. They lay it right out there. They're not sneaking around. They're like, this is my emotion. I'm mad. I'm mad. When I'm pissed, I'm pissed. When I'm happy, I'm happy. When I'm funny, I'm funny. Bill's always got an angle. But this year, with three A-plus quarterbacks, and he's got, you know, older beat-up Cam and two other guys, this year, he's, you know, it's platooning quarterbacks. He's got no plan. He's making it up. Let's not address in free agency. Folks, come on. This is a hill I'm going to die on. But when the Patriots go 5-11 or 6-10 and they have the eighth pick and they've got like 11 picks and nobody except Jacksonville needs a quarterback, they're ensuring this whole thing about tanking. It's not called tanking. Get over it. Salespeople are no longer called salespeople. They're called account executives. Bob's an executive. I thought he was a sales guy. He is an executive for accounts. Multiple. Bob's an executive. It's not called tanking in the NFL. Peyton Manning can play. Nah, Andrew Luck's available. It's not called tanking. It's restructuring. It's moving the furniture around a little bit.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's bring in Nick Wright, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing, just like Nick, the best or nothing. Well, quite an interesting night at the Nick Wright household last night.
Quickly, hold on, real quick. Colin, I'm sorry, I have to congratulate you.
What?
Can I tell the audience... Big night for you last night.
Wow.
Because best I can tell, you picked the Blazers and the Lakers to win the series. So congrats. Couldn't lose. You were watching it, probably a drink in both hands.
Yeah.
So I was happy for you, but go ahead.
I still think the Lakers will win the series, but let's be honest about this. Players don't change. Uh-huh. AD was not a great late game player in New Orleans. He's not a great late game player for the Lakers. You have to acknowledge this. Mm-hmm. LeBron has to carry this team in the fourth. AD's disappearing act now is a trend, Nick. This is what he is, right?
Well, contrary to what some people would have you believe, LeBron's arguably the greatest closer in league history, so it should be his job. But, yeah, I mean, listen, Anthony Davis is going to have to be better in the fourth quarter of the games once you get to the conference finals and the NBA finals. But there is this narrative today from folks across wherever you are on the LeBron spectrum, from Skip Bayless to Shannon Sharpe, the one thing everyone seems to agree on is, well, listen, LeBron's got to be more aggressive. The 17 assists were nice, but he's got to be more aggressive. I say to all of those people, you are wrong. LeBron James is not playing to beat the Blazers. He is playing to win a title. And the only way the Lakers win a title is if by the time they face their toughest opponents, Kuzma and KCP and Danny Green and Anthony Davis, are all feeling good about their games, hitting shots, and in rhythm. LeBron knows the three highest scoring finals of his career. You know what they all have in common? They're all losses because his teammates let him down. So this idea that LeBron, I heard you talking, Hassan Whiteside scared him off. I think he understands what the Lakers need, not to win four games against Portland, but to win 16 games over the next 8 weeks. And that is guys who right now are not in rhythm, get in rhythm. Now, if they're down 3-1 in the series, then I think his approach would change because it becomes break glass in case of emergency. But down at 0-0 or even down 1-0, I think LeBron's approach is going to be the exact same. Distribute, get other guys going.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter to me because I picked both teams, so I feel great about the whole series. Yeah,
true. Correct. You're in a win-win. You can't lose.
So I said this. The difference between Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, they're both talented. But I never feel if Mahomes is down 24-0, I'm like, oh, he's more dangerous. Because now Andy Reid's like, all right, kid, save us. With Lamar, I don't feel that way. He got down by 10 to Tennessee in the playoffs third quarter, and I'm like, okay, this doesn't feel the same. Giannis has a little bit of that, is that from behind,
yep.
He's marginalized. And I watched yesterday, Nick, yep. The Bucks defense, and I don't know the answer to it, it's not as suffocating. And they're going to play from behind in games. Do you think it's a problem?
This I think you absolutely nailed. It's the final piece to the puzzle for Giannis. It's why, despite the fact that he's about to win his second straight league MVP, you rarely hear him called just universally the best player in the world. Because as great as he is, as dominant as he is, there is a bit of a, oh gosh, this is embarrassing. What was the thing that hurt Superman that made him?
Kryptonite.
I don't know the word.
Kryptonite.
I don't know comic book. Thank you. There is a bit of a kryptonite, and it's one NBA guys have to deal with all the time, which is, we're losing and got to come back. I think the Lamar comparison is a very apt one. There is, as great as Mahomes is, you could argue there is no quarterback in the league you would rather have with a 6-point lead than Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Because he can do everything. And as great as LeBron is, as great as James Harden, Kevin Durant are, you could argue that if you're up 8 midway through the fourth quarter, there's nobody better to have than that guy right there. But the flip side to that question is, what if you're down 8? And it is the question LeBron or Giannis needs to answer this postseason. Because it is the hole in his game, and it is why him not having, even though he hit 3 threes yesterday, not having a reliable jump shot, that's the last piece for him. And maybe he'll answer it here. And your point about the Bucks, who had a historically great defense in the regular season, that defense has to show up. So on this one, I agree with you 1,000%. And because I agree with you 1,000%, I have to take a shot on the front end, which is my, oh my, how far Patrick Mahomes has gone. Because when he was down 24-0 to the Texans, according to Colin Cowherd, he had never won a big game in his life. And yet you were totally confident he was going to come back in that one. So good for Patrick. That's quite a journey for him.
Speaking of journey, Westbrook's been around a while. Uh-huh. I don't know if you noticed this last night, but
this was the best
Houston looked in the bubble. They actually were great on threes because the world's worst three-point shooter wasn't playing. And it is funny how certain players leave a team or miss a game, and the team's not the same. Westbrook leaves Houston, and last night, there is no question. They were virtually flawless. They hit threes. They played defense. They were intense. You didn't notice that at all?
I think you raise a really good point that if a guy leaves a team and you look at the team's record the year before he got there and it's better than the year he was there, and then you look at the team's record the year after he left and it's better than he was there, you start to question his impact. Now, that player I'm describing is your future GOAT, Kawhi Leonard, not Russell Westbrook. But for the sake of the discussion, I'll bring it back to Russell Westbrook.
All right.
Listen, Harden, this is not about what Russ does or doesn't do. This was about James Harden once again reminding people. You can argue about his playoff chops. You can argue about his clutch gene. You can argue about his watchability. He is one of the 5 greatest scorers of the last 50 years. And if you think differently, you're wrong. Like, that's what last night was about. Also, here's something we're not hearing this morning or this afternoon about the Rockets. And I'm shocked. They got out-rebounded by double digits. So, like, I think that counts as half a loss or something. Because every time the Rockets lose, we talk about rebounding margin. But they won, so it's like, oh, who cares? Harden's awesome. Like, listen, they can beat Oklahoma City without Russ because Harden is that great. They can't beat the Lakers without Russ. And I do think that even though Russ obviously is not a good three-point shooter, Russ's penetration makes the defense collapse and allows guys to get open threes. As great as they were last night, I don't know if you can expect that type of performance from Jeff Green and the like once again.
So I said this before, is maybe it's because I'm manipulative that I can spot manipulative. But I am supposed
very manipulative, by the way,
very.
America. A professional manipulator, if you really think about it.
So I'm supposed to believe the NFL's most manipulative coach, when asked if, would you think about rotating quarterbacks? He's like, golly, good question. You bet, super duper. I'm on it. Really? Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer, and they're going to go back and forth. Are we not watching what's happening? Belichick is now answering patiently ridiculous questions. He's a historian to the league, but knows suddenly now platooning quarterbacks is a good idea. Is it because I'm manipulative? He clearly has a plan to get one of the 3 great quarterbacks next year, and platooning quarterbacks is a way to ensure you're not going to have a great record. Nobody says tanking. We don't tank in football. You don't tank in hockey. It's too, you know, there's violence. But you're seeing some of this, right? Like Belichick suddenly Mr. Nice JV coach that wants all 4 quarterbacks to play. And by the way, if guys opt out, it's all about family first. Doesn't it feel a little fishy? A little?
All right. So here's the part that where I can't follow you down this path.
All right.
If he were honestly considering platooning quarterbacks, I feel like he would dismiss the question. The fact that he actually acknowledged the question makes me think if he is this king manipulator like you're making him out to be, which he may or may not be, that he, if he were actually thinking about it, he would dismiss it. And if he wasn't thinking about it, he would be like, oh, let's have people have this conversation, even though we're never going to do it. There's a bit of a Princess Bride situation.
Right.
I know what you know that I know what you know what I know. And so I don't know where that train ends. What I found most interesting about the Patriots quarterback rotation yesterday, where it was Cam, Stidham, and Hoyer, was not that all three are competing for the starting spot, but that I think Hoyer and Stidham are competing for the backup job. I think the reason Hoyer's getting those reps is because they don't know who their backup is, not they don't know who the starter is. Cam's going to be the starter, but the backup there is going to really matter because of Cam's injury history the last few years. Hoyer's been in the system. He's been with these coaches. He's been with these players. He doesn't need a bunch of reps. The fact that he's getting them, to me, is likely more about Stidham. And if the Patriots end up with an awesome quarterback, Colin, in 2 years or 3 years, unfortunately, for the right-thinking Americans who really don't like this franchise, I believe that quarterback is more likely to be Aaron Rodgers than Trevor Lawrence. I think if there is a master plan for Belichick,
right,
I think it's about what Aaron Rodgers could be more so than what one of these young college quarterbacks could be.
Well, that was good. That was good today. Yeah, you're well thought out. It was all very well thought out today. I did appreciate that.
Thank you. Congrats again, man. I'm sending you your half Blaker, or your Blaker's jersey. That's what I'm going to call it, a jersey. I'm very excited for you.
Get out of here, you jerk. All you do is mock me. It's very hurtful, right. Very painful. Nick Wright, first things first. Good stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Russell Westbrook's a lot of things. I always thought his MVP was nonsense. Last night, Houston played their best game in the bubble. Westbrook was gone. They shot threes effectively. Why? Because Westbrook didn't take any. Their defense was great. Is that there's a big difference. I've always thought the media doesn't understand the word valuable. So let's be fair here. I always thought his MVP was nonsense. The most valuable player in the league easily for 10 years in a row is LeBron. It's not even arguable. It's not about. So let's. What is Westbrook? Now, there's five boxes he checks. Is he exciting? Oh, hell yeah. He's must watch. Is he athletic? He may be the league's most athletic guy. Is he interesting? It's kind of fascinating. Yeah. Is he productive? Yes, very productive. Is he respected? Yes, absolutely. Players love him. I mean, MJ thinks, you know, no question. But is he valuable? Oklahoma City got better when he left. Kevin Durant got more efficient and won more when he left. Victor Oladipo became an all-star when he left. Sabonis became an all-star when they left him. So when you buy a home, what's valuable? Oh, a kitchen. Well, I mean, no, you could rebuild your kitchen. Bathrooms are essential. Not really. You can have bad bathrooms and buy a house. The most valuable thing when you buy a house is location. I can fix anything in the house. I can't move it. I can't move it to the beach. I can't move it overlooking the ski lift. I can't move it to Park Avenue. What's most valuable when you buy a house? Don't worry about the kitchen. Don't worry about where's it located. Is it in a good school district? You think it's a safe neighborhood if you can afford that? Do you think it's you have easy access to walking parks? And, you know, that's the most valuable thing when you buy real estate. That's what all the smart real estate people do. They don't worry about the kitchen. You can fix the kitchen. What you can't fix the location. It is what it is. So the value with Westbrook, he checks a zillion boxes. He doesn't check the valuable box. When LeBron James leaves a team, they go into the, they fall off the cliff into the sea. Even if they're well-coached Miami, well-run Miami, good roster Miami, LeBron leaves, they're a mess. They could be a championship-level team. Cleveland twice. He leaves, they're the worst team in the league an hour later. Like, that is valuable. It's like, I've always said this. There's a few things you should never go cheap on. Toilet paper. Good toilet paper is valuable. It's not expensive. Don't go cheap on toilet paper. Don't go cheap on quarterbacks. They're very valuable. There are a lot of good football players. Nobody's even close to the value of a quarterback. So when I watch Houston yesterday, their intensity was unbelievable. Their shooting was unbelievable. Their defense was unbelievable. If LeBron James leaves your basketball team, the Lakers, their defense won't be as good. Their passing won't be as good. Situationally, they won't be as good. Defensively, they won't be as good. Houston was better at everything yesterday without Westbrook. And that's not to say Westbrook's not great. He is great. This league is full of great players and great coaches. That is not it. But valuable is a different word than great. There, in my life, I've been watching the NBA for 40 years. I've been watching this league forever. There have been a lot of great players that I didn't think were terribly valuable. And then you get the guys who are not only valuable to their team, they're valuable to the league. I mean, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were unbelievably valuable to the NBA brand. The league was kind of new commissioner, swimming around. Bunch of teams were almost bankrupt. And here comes this good-looking, effervescent Magic Johnson. He was not only valuable to Kareem's career and the Lakers brand, he was valuable to the league. Michael Jordan wasn't just valuable to the Bulls. He was valuable internationally to basketball. So value has several levels. And again, Westbrook is a great talent. Exciting, athletic, energized, productive. Guys love him. They respect him. He plays his butt off. But the valuable thing with him, I've always said, there are a lot more valuable guys in the league, in my opinion. Monty Williams, of all the accolades of Monty Williams, I can assure him that the strangest award that will ever be on his mantle 20 years from now will be best coach in the bubble. He just won that award. He is joining us live, the Suns coach. First season in Phoenix, they went 8-0 in the bubble. You know, it's interesting, Monty. That is the strangest plaque any coach has ever won in the history of the league. So congratulations for coach of the bubble, Monty. But Joy brought up, we were talking about this during the break, is that because there's no home court advantage, what became very apparent in the bubble, and I saw it yesterday with Houston, effort is winning these games. You convinced your young Phoenix team. You guys played hard every moment. And in this bubble, you don't get the home court call. You don't get the home court juice from the fans. You're not tired from flying. I just thought the teams that played with effort, Portland's doing this. You convinced the young team of Phoenix to play hard for every minute of every game. Did you figure it out before we did that effort was going to be the deciding factor in this bubble?
Well, I appreciate the kind words. We have a bit of a blueprint for how we want to play. Our guys bought in from day one in Flagstaff at our first training camp on the high level of intensity that we had to play with to be successful. And one of our coaches, Darko Rajkovic, he was watching the games overseas, and he made a remark to the staff that the teams that were in shape and playing with a high level of force and intensity from the start were having the most success.
Yeah.
And that fit with our DNA. And so we just, you know, we didn't fall into it. It's just how we have to play. And we have talented guys for sure, but they're young. And then we had, you know, phenomenal play from Devin and leadership from Ricky, and a number of our guys stepped up and grew on the fly. So that's the only way we can play. That's the only way I want to play. I don't think you should be rewarded for playing hard. I think that should be a given. And it's not something I take for granted. We just have a team that competes every time we touch the floor.
You know, it's interesting. You faced the Lakers and Portland this year. I was saying Damian Lillard is almost scarier when he trails. Because then there's no, you know, then the coaches are like, Dame, we need you. Come say, it's almost like Patrick Mahomes in the NFL. Trailing, he's scarier than leading. Because when he's leading, Andy Reid may tell him, just run the ball, run the clock out. When he's trailing, Mahomes is going to throw it 12 straight times. You have faced Portland. You have faced the Lakers. Is there a way to defend Dame? Is there a secret sauce or anything with Portland defending them?
Well, we haven't figured it out. Damian is a guy that From the first time I met him at the Chicago pre-draft camp, you just kind of knew he was different. And we had him in a room doing the draft process, and all of the people in the room were asking about his family, you know, hobbies and all that stuff. And as a coach, I wasn't really worried about that. And so I jammed him up with a time, score, situation question. And I hit him with about four or five different scenarios in one play. And he looked me in the eyes right after he processed the question. And he said, "Coach, I don't know." And I thought that was profound. He didn't try to fool me. He didn't try to come up with something that would sound like he knew what he was talking about. He had enough security and confidence in his own ability to say he didn't know. And I thought to myself, I'm like, this, I don't know what he's going to be. Nobody knew back then, but I thought it said a lot about the confidence that he had in his ability and he had in himself. And, you know, we're seeing it now.
You know, Lakers, meanwhile, they're very big. I thought Dwight Howard made a couple of key plays last night. JaVale McGee's always been athletic. Anthony Davis is a handful. I do think over the course of this series, I think the Lakers' size probably ends up winning this series. It's a real handful. When you face the Lakers, how did you work around, if you could, how did you work around their just size?
We had to zone a bit to hide some of the matchups or what we would call mismatches. And so we zoned and tried to get them late into the clock. And we would switch and live with a contested shot, hopefully a non-paint two. But the guy that will probably help them when he gets back is Rondo, because he sets the deck for everybody. He's an organizer, and he's one of those guys that you don't value him until he's not out there on the floor. And when I was watching the game last night, it just seemed like they were missing his ability to organize the floor and get guys in their spots. But they're certainly a big team, a deep team. They missed a ton of shots last night, and that's always the equalizer, especially in the playoffs, where plays aren't necessarily going to get you over the top. It's going to be concepts and environments, talent, and decisions. And last night, Portland made shots. And when I saw CJ come out in the third quarter, he was really aggressive.
Yep.
And when he played like that in the third, I thought, LA could be in trouble if you saw a couple of his shots go down, and he did, and it helped those guys win the game.
Monty Williams' first year in Phoenix, he was U.S. national team assistant coach under Mike Krzyzewski in Rio de Janeiro. Suns 8-0 in the bubble. He won the bubble coach. So you were in Philadelphia last year. I know, it's so funny. You were in Philly last year with Embiid and Simmons, and it's interesting about this sport. You can have two great players. They don't always play together well. I always thought it was a credit to KD and Steph that you had these two great players, and they just fit. They just fit. Chris Paul and Harden,
right.
It didn't fit as well, and that's okay. That there's nothing wrong with that. That's when you're with. I mean, here's my thing about Embiid and Simmons. I always had this theory that if any relationship, if you're in therapy after 8 years, maybe it's just too darn hard. Like stuff shouldn't be that hard. And I watch Embiid and Simmons, and I'm a cynic on this, Monty. I'm like, God, it can't be this hard. Is it possible that Embiid and Simmons are both great? But it's never going to quite click.
Well, you know, I had the fortune of coaching those two guys. And the thing that, you know, I don't want to make declarations about this year's team. I can only speak to my experience with those two guys. The thing that really helped those two was J.J. Redick, because J.J. had the ability to space the floor, which helped both of those guys. And when Ben would go into his DHO, his guy would tend to back off of him into the paint. And that was an easy shot for JJ because there was no help after the dribble handoff. And so JJ was a great compliment to those two guys. That's no disrespect to Jay Rich or Tobias or any of those guys that are playing with Philly now. But I know that JJ created a lot of opportunities for that team. And it's hard when you're playing in a city like Philadelphia and everything you do is criticized every hour. Those guys are competitive, high-level talents, and they're young. Ben is a guy that I spent a ton of time with. And, you know, he's right there. I think when he starts to take those shots in the game and make them like he does in his warmups and his workouts, you're probably going to see a top five player in the league.
Yeah.
But the jury's out on that team. But they their upside is tremendous.
You know, it's the bubble is really great. I mean, I've been watching the NBA and been a fan forever. I think the aesthetic is amazing. I don't think I've ever been more into these games. There's no home court. Intensity is like college. I love the young players in this league right now. It's just amazing to me. Kids are coming in the league and they're better earlier. When was the first time Devin Booker is going to be your guide now for years? When was the first time you looked at Devin Booker? Because Kentucky puts a lot of dudes in the NBA. A lot of miss, sure. A lot of okay, and then Devin comes in and you're like, pow. When was the first time you saw him? And did you think Devin Booker would be this, which is, you know, the young Harden, like literally a guy that could score 50 and you wouldn't be surprised?
I think for me, it was my time with USA Basketball. And the senior team would play against the select team. And I think it was his first time in that environment. And after every scrimmage and every practice, we go into our meetings and start talking about players on our team. And we talk about the scrimmage and was there somebody from that select team that we could bring up? And almost every day, Devin's name came up. He had a confidence about him and he wanted everybody to know that he belonged.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to, you know, to be with him every day indirectly. And he reminded me so much of Brandon Roy, who I coached.
Oh, God, I love Brandon Roy.
Yeah, he and Book have so many similarities, not many weaknesses in their game at all. Great footwork, good hands, and fundamentally more sound than people give them credit. But the difference between, you know, Devin and Brandon and other players is their confidence. Devin feels like he's the best player on the floor every time we play.
Yeah.
And so I didn't see what he's doing now back then, but that was the first encounter that I had with him, and you could see that he was different from the other young players on the select team.
Everybody I know in the league loves you. Monty Williams, how are your kids during COVID? Your kids doing okay? How are you doing?
My kids are great, man. I just graduated. Thank God I didn't have to do anything, but she just graduated from Wheaton College, and I have two in college, and my boys are here at the house and in my pocket. And they're all doing well. They're just they're the inspiration for me, and I'm so thankful that God gave me these kids. And my new wife Lisa has her hands full trying to take care of me and all of my children. So thank you so much for asking, man. I really appreciate that.
A huge fans. You're just a credit to the sport, man. You're one of the good guys. Appreciate you stopping by. I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you so much. I thank you for allowing me to promote our program and